This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
A bit of a seesaw day in the markets as we bounced around with plenty of volatility on Tuesday. Welcome to Market Talk. Thanks so much for joining us once again. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to be here with you as we take a look at the markets and issues impacting rural America. Coming up here on the show, we're going to take a deep dive into the market trade with Brian Split of AgMarket.net. He's going to join us coming up here in segment two and three to recap another volatile day in the market trade on Tuesday. But first, we are going to be joined now by Whitney Munnen of AgriGold to talk a little bit about harvest and how things are progressing across the country. Whitney, great to catch up with you again. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, Jesse. Thanks for having me here this afternoon.
Thanks for joining us here today, and a lot of exciting things to talk about with AgriGold. I think just to start, let's talk a little bit about harvest. We're obviously getting into the thick of harvest here across the country, or starting to. It's been a variable year. We've heard the stories. We've seen the pictures. We know that it varies region to region, but overall, as you are getting some early harvest results, what are your thoughts and what are you hearing from growers as how things are shaping up here to wrap up the growing season?
Yeah, Jesse, I would say the yield results are as variable as the reports we were getting in season, if I'm going to be totally honest. We have some farmers that are experiencing the highest yields their operation have ever seen. And then I believe a quote from one of my agronomists that I picked up this week, we have other places where the moisture percentage of the corn is higher than that of the yield. It's just the reality of the situation we find ourselves in. This has been a dynamic growing season. And to say that it has been a challenge might be an understatement, especially for some areas of the U.S. Significant drought. I have one testing location where a salesperson told me this last week, from the time it got planted to now, it only had 4 inches of rain. So it's incredibly devastating for farmers in some of those areas of the U.S. where we've had incredible drought, high heat, high temperatures. But other places, we have a more moderate environment, and that's yielding high yield. So It's a tough spot, I would say, in terms of getting our arms around truly how this crop is coming in. Now, in September, you know, the USDA just recently came out and adjusted some of those yields down to, I believe, 172.5 bushels anticipated across the Corn Belt. In terms of my perspective, I think that is probably a very real number. I think that's probably indicative as of what we're going to see as a whole, if not maybe even trending downward, just because some of the lows are pretty low. I wish some of the highs were even higher, Jesse.
Very true. Well, Whitney, I wonder as well, I haven't heard a ton about disease and pest pressure this year in corn or soybeans. It's been an abnormally quiet year, I feel like, but I know there are some issues out there. I think of maybe tar spot is a big one in corn right now. But as you think about disease and pest pressure from this growing season, anything big stand out to you and anything that producers need to look at as they're harvesting and maybe scouting those fields and getting into the fall kind of window here and getting ready for next year?
Yeah, I think there would be a couple of things that I would tell farmers to have their eye on and be thinking about. By all intents and purposes, this was a moderate year in terms of disease pressure and pest pressure, very contrary to that of the environmental pressures that the crop faced this year. But a couple of diseases do stand out as things that people should just be moderating, watching, and if they see presence, maybe even thinking about changing their management practices for next year. Now, you mentioned tar spot. We had the great fortune that tar spot actually came into most of the Corn Belt and some of those most intensively hit geographies of the past quite late. So in terms of overall yield robbing capacity, we're not really seeing a huge amount of yield taken off the top from tar spot just because, quite frankly, it was very late to the party. However, we are seeing some other incremental stock rots and things like that happening in the field, really due in large part to the environmental stressors we saw this year. So everything from anthracnose stock rot, even anthracnose top dieback, some of those diseases that, quite frankly, are just finishing off the corn. They've been fighting, and they're now not fighting anymore, and the diseases are taking advantage of that. So where we have premature death of the crop, we're seeing the disease start to make its way into the crop. So as we're looking at some lower overall temperatures here over the next couple of weeks and a cold front sweeping across the Corn Belt and Midwest, that means our dry down is going to slow down in a lot of that crop, but that does not mean that the disease pressure is going to slow down in that crop. So I would really advise farmers to make sure they're checking their fields, doing those push tests, pinch tests, being out and evaluating the stock quality of some of those crops, because while the grain moisture might not be where they want it to be, the stocks are going to be ready to come out this year with some of those environmental stressors we've had. So I would really just tell farmers to keep a close eye on that, as well as we are seeing some incremental ear molds. So, you know, where we have open husk type products, or maybe where we've had corn earworm damage, which has been a pest that's been on the rise this year, we are seeing more ear molds potentially out there in corn than we have over the last couple of years past, I would say holistically across the U.S. So the diplodias, the trichodermas, some of those ear molds that are not good in terms of downstream, in terms of utilization for feeding and things like that. But also those are ear molds we have to watch out in the bin for. So we don't want to put that ear mold in the bin and have it then continue to proliferate and affect all of our grain. So we just really tell farmers, be watching your grain, looking what you're putting in the grain tank. And if you do see some of those things, make sure if you are going to dry it down pretty quick. Make sure you're getting it to less than 14% moisture to prevent the spread of that infection to the rest of the corn there in your bin. And quite frankly, if you don't have to hold it, don't hold it. Get it out, get it sold, and get it on its way. From a soybean perspective, we've really moderated a lot of disease. We saw a potential uptick of some SDS, which some growers said it was there, and then it stopped. But from a soybean perspective, it's been very even keel across most of the U.S. this year.
Well, great stuff, Whitney. I'm sure if farmers need a little advice with agronomy, they want to learn about new products from AgriGold, they can contact their dealer, their local agronomist, their local representative, or go online. A lot of great ways to get in touch, isn't there?
That's absolutely the best way to go about it. And, you know, the other part of this message, Jesse, would be when it comes to some of these new products, farmers know the song and dance. They're often in short supply. So I'd encourage people to be making those connections with their local DSM, their local agronomist, their agent and reseller, if they have interest in seeing some of this new germplasm and genetics, because quite frankly, we got to put it on order because there are smaller piles.
Definitely. Well, and again, AgriGold.com is a place to start online as well. With that, Whitney Munnen of AgriGold, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for the time, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Jesse.
And again, that is Whitney Munnen of AgriGold, and great to catch up with her. You can, again, learn more online, AgriGold.com. All right, well, Tuesday saw another volatile day in the markets. We kind of seesawed around with the dollar moving off its highs, then going back towards its highs. Plenty to discuss in this volatile trade market. Brian Splitt, AgMarket.net, he joins us on the way after the break, back with more Market Talk right after this.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now as we take a look at the market trade action we saw on Tuesday, we welcome in Brian Splitt of AgMarket.net. Brian, great to catch up with you again, sir. How are you?
I am very good. Always good to be here, Jesse.
Thanks for the time, Brian. Let's dive right in. You know, we saw a little bit of risk on momentum early on Tuesday's session after we've been seeing the markets just taking a beating with the dollar screaming higher. But even then, we kind of saw the dollar come off of its lows, and then we saw commodities come off their highs on Tuesday. Felt like a little bit of seesaw trade action. I know just everything going on with the macro markets and especially that dollar and other currencies, there's a lot going on in the trade right now, a lot of volatility. But as I mentioned, Tuesday just kind of felt like a little bit of a back and forth seesaw trade action, Brian.
Yeah, I think when you look at corn and soybeans, both of those found buying late in the day yesterday and overnight where they should have. So thinking about corn, we've got the long-term uptrend that is drawn off of the July lows. That comes in just below the 100-day moving average, which is where the trade bought it yesterday and overnight. Did see a good bounce off of that, like you'd mentioned. And it was actually right at 9:30 this morning. Corn rallied about 6 cents in just a matter of a few minutes. Beans rallied 5 or 6 cents. I think wheat rallied 10 or 15 cents in a very short period of time. So somebody came in at 9:30 and bought a few of each of different things. And then we just spent the rest of the day after that little buying burst, just kind of filling back and beans made new lows late in the day. Corn was just a couple cents off the lows. So one of the things that we've been looking at, we do have this report at the end of the week, and we have not had spot soybeans or front month soybeans below $14 since January after getting back over $14. So when you think about the implications of this report Friday, I think if we do see November soybeans below 14, that would be a very negative development on the chart. So we've been advising having some kind of put coverage for producers that don't want to sell beans yet or want to see their yields prior to making their sales. Much the same when you think about that uptrend in corn and these moving averages. 670 come Friday's close is going to be a very important spot. And I think if we're below 670, then that's going to look negative on the chart.
Well, and you mentioned those 100-day moving averages and the report coming up on Friday. And I think that is definitely key, especially as well when you throw in everything going on with the dollar and other currencies. And one has to wonder, you know, as you look at the charts, you mentioned some there a little bit. One has to wonder, you know, can we hold up at these 100-day moving averages with the constant pressure from this U.S. dollar? How long can we hold these averages, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, you've got the dollar. So just you think back to the trade last week when the Fed raised interest rates and the dollar was trading just above 310 or 110 at that point. We're trading up around 114 and some change. And I think when you look at the consolidation that we had over the last year or so on the dollar and breaking out of that consolidation, those measurements look up to about 117.50 or so. So we could still have some further strength in the dollar. Now, when you look at commodities and you look at corn and soybeans specifically, our exports are not good for corn. So that's no secret. We're running about half of the pace we were this time last year. Our inspections on soybeans, and I know it's very early in the marketing year, but that looks to be a bit of a concern, especially now we just had Argentina sell a bunch of beans to the Chinese. So do the Chinese even need to come here for OND type business? And then that's just going to be followed up by Brazil's crop. And if we plant the Brazilian crop in decent weather and we don't have any major weather concerns, the trade's going to get more and more confident on the idea that we could have 150 plus million ton crop there. If that type of crop is realized, our exports maybe non-existent for the next 6 to 8 months. So that's something that producers have to be mindful of. And when we are using strategies to cover next year's price levels as well.
Yeah, because you brought up exports there as well. And it feels like this market is kind of turning into demand destruction mode almost, Brian, when you think about the way exports are and the high dollar and other high values around the world. I know the British pound, we were talking about that off air, falling apart here this week as well. China's economy, et cetera, et cetera. It feels like a little bit of demand destruction is kind of coming in here across the entire ag space, whether we're talking grains, oil seeds, livestock, et cetera, et cetera. Doesn't it feel like a little bit of demand destruction right now?
It does. And so we cover the exports. I think something, too, that people have to realize when they're thinking demand destruction, it's very easy to look at the futures board and say, oh, well, futures are 670. We saw prices get to 7+. Are we rationing demand at these levels? But don't think about the futures board. Think about the cash price that's out there. That's what's rationing demand right now. And so I think that when you think about the basis levels that we have in cash values, those are price levels in the cash market that should be rationing demand. So I think we're seeing it in the cash market. I think that's showing up in our exports. And so now what's left, we're going to be thinking about the type of animals that we're feeding, how many are on feed right now. Are we rationing demand there? And then, of course, ethanol for corn. I think right now with where meal is, we're going to continue to see good demand from the crusher with where the board crush is. So unless we really start to see the products back off, that's probably going to continue to be a bright spot on the soybean demand side.
Yeah, and you mentioned the cash side. I know we have some pretty strong bases still regionally, and which is something that, typically this time of year, we got to think as well seasonally with the harvest pressure. I know some of the early yields we've been hearing quarter bean wise across the country have been pretty good. So, thinking about cash kind of supporting things a little bit right now, how long can that hold up regionally with all this harvest pressure that we would typically get in the market this time of year, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, something we have to remember is the crop is a couple of weeks behind. So we're used to getting harvest pressure a little bit earlier, seeing the basis moves because of that a little bit earlier. The USDA progress report yesterday still has harvest a little bit behind what the trade was looking for. So I don't think we're getting really into the gut slot of that harvest pressure quite yet, but I would expect some basis movements to come. And so I think one of the things we're looking at on soybeans is, again, if you have beans and you don't want to price them yet because you want to see what they're yielding, again, we're advising keeping puts at that $14 level to make sure you've got a floor under it while you're figuring that out. Once you know where you're at, you probably should be looking at selling the beans out of the field, storing the corn. And if you want to have some kind of participation in soybeans in case there is a South American weather event, then build some kind of a March option strategy. Take the risk, off the flat price, buy your call spread or call or whatever you're going to do, pay what you pay for it. That's your maximum risk. And then go from there and call it a day and then work on your corn marketing.
Brian, let's talk about the wheat markets a little bit. They had a decent day on Tuesday, double-digit gains at the close, although we were off the high. Winter wheat planting is advancing, although I've heard some reports some growers are dusting stuff in because it's still very dry in the southern plains. Look at support levels. I think, KC wheat especially has got some support at the 20-day at 924, last I looked, and a little bit of resistance overhead around 984. What's your thoughts in this wheat market as we kind of look at things here in the broader backdrop of what's going on in the markets right now?
So the wheat to me, and I've been kind of focused on this hard red, so the Kansas City variety wheat, I am using the monthly continuous chart as our guide. And one thing I think is uncanny is the way that we're trading and how close we're trading to 2008. So in 2008, we had made a high that was, I believe, 1374 and three quarters or 84 and three quarters or something like that. This year, it was just a nickel off that high. And then from there, we came down, and 4 months after making that high, we tested $8, which we did last month. So now we're in the fifth month of after making that high. In 08, we made a high of 988 and a quarter for that fifth month. We just made a high in KC wheat this week of 989 and three quarters. So what this would suggest is if we continue to follow this pattern, we're going to go right back down again into October, which would be the sixth month after making the high, and we're going to revisit the lower eights again. Now, if we do that, and if this pattern holds true, I think that's, again, a very good buying opportunity on KC wheat in the low to mid eights, looking for a pump back up to 950 again. And that might be your last selling opportunity on new crop wheat. So I think if we do see some highs again around 950 in the front month contract in the month of November, that's where I want to be selling the July 23 contract and start looking at some marketing for next year's wheat or the wheat that's being drilled right now. And I don't know what the case was here, what might lead us to this, but in 08, we found ourselves down about $6 And so that would, timing wise, if we hold on to the similarities from 08, that would put us in that January timeframe of having this market back down around six. And so I think if there's some opportunity to sell some 950 plus wheat for next year, we should be jumping on that in the next couple months.
That's Brian Split of AgMarket.net. We'll continue our conversation coming up after the break. Back with more Market Talk right after this.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least. But there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And again, welcome back to Market Talk. Thanks so much for joining us here today. Once again, I am your host, Jesse Allen. Brian Split of AgMarket.net is our guest analyst here today. We're going to get back to our conversation with Brian in just a minute. Want to look at the closing numbers from Tuesday's trade action. December quarter up 1.25, 667.5. March quarter up 2, 672.75. May quarter up 2 at 673.5. November beans 3.25 lower, 1408. January down 2.25, 1414. March beans down 1.75 at 1417. October bean meal down 650 a ton, 426.10. December down 390 at 413.60. Soybean oil for October down 45 points, 65.66. December down 7 at 62.39. Chicago wheat, December 13.5 higher, 871.5. March up 13 at 884.25. Kansas City hard red winter wheat, December up 13.75, 943.25. March up 14.5 at 940.5. Spring wheat, December up 12, 943.25. March spring wheat was up 10.25 at 948. Oats for December down 8.5 at 370. March oats down 9.25, 374.25. Canola up 310 at 829.10. Looking over at the cotton market as well on the day, Tuesday, October cotton down 28 points, 90.04. December down 28 points, 88.09. Looking over at the livestock trade from Tuesday's session, live cattle October up 10, 143.57. December down 45 at 146.90. February down 60, 150.85. April live cattle down 60, 154.52. Feeder cattle September 117, lower 175.70. October down 95, 176.12. November feeder cattle down 77 at 176.27. And January feeder cattle down 92 at 176.80. Lean hogs October 167, lower 88.70. December hogs down 315, 76.25. February down 330 at 80.35. April lean hogs 260, lower 86.60. And May down 275 at 91.25 on the day Tuesday. All right, let's get back to our conversation with Brian Split of AgMarket.net joining us here today on Market Talk. Let's switch gears and talk the livestock markets. Livestock started Tuesday trying to trade higher with the dollar breaking a bit, but then we quickly we lost that upward momentum. Hogs have just been taking a beating here the last couple of sessions. More triple-digit losses on Tuesday. As you look at this hog market, you know, is this looking like maybe a longer-term correction in hogs here? And I would have to think, you know, hogs keep going lower. That could at least maybe help out at the retail counter.
Right. So, you know, we're going to be getting into earnings season, and anything protein-related from the food sector is going to be something that's paying attention to corporate earnings. When we think about, you know, the chart right now, and this is something we just looked at this last week and in our weekly webinar that we do on Wednesdays. We looked at both live cattle, lean hogs, and feeder cattle. Feeder cattle are the ones that showed a top first. They have a head and shoulder top. This October contract still projects down to about 171 for the measurement. Now, live cattle made a double top. Those two highs were made almost exactly 5 months apart. So last Wednesday, we were looking at, hey, you probably should be buying some 148 puts. They were going for about $2 at that point. Because if we took out 148, we took out the most recent set of lows on a monthly basis, and we took out the uptrend, which we've done. So now we have to get back over about 148.50 in order to turn the chart back to neutral to positive. I think we're going 144. That's what that measurement would suggest we're going to for a downside target. And then you look at lean hogs. We looked at that last week as well. There's a head and shoulder top there. The recommendation was buy puts at 80 to 82. Those were going for, you know, 80s were going for less than $2 to 82s were going for a hair over $2. Once we got on the other side of 80, it was death to smoochy there. That projects down to about 71.50. So I still think we've got some lower lows to come yet in all of the livestock over the next couple of weeks.
Brian, I know Hogs and Pigs report coming up on Thursday. Do you think that could maybe give some support? I believe private estimates are saying inventory expected to be roughly about 1.5% lower. I just wonder if that does happen, how much support could that give to hogs in the broader scope of things?
Well, based on the scope of the move that we've had and the amount that we've fallen off the highs, if there is a friendly report, we could very easily bounce from that. This December contract really needs to get back over that 80 to 81 zone in order to, again, turn it into a more of a neutral to slightly friendly look. But again, this is a very clear pattern, and getting through 80 was a very big deal on the chart. And I'd be surprised if this market didn't go take a look at the low 70s first before getting a more meaningful bounce.
Right. On the cattle side as well, and this kind of ties back in maybe to the corn market too, we're thinking about feed costs, et cetera, and a lot of chatter about, you know, will we have to try and move some corn, some feed from, say, the eastern states to the feedlot country in the Southwest just with the lack of corn there? I wonder how that's going to impact margins for our cattle guys there in parts of the Southwestern Plains as we move in here into the back half of the year.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you're going to have some kind of a pull in order to get corn from states where it's available to where there's a severe deficit. So, you know, the deficit in the Southwest is going to have to, you're going to have corn pulled into that region for feed needs. And that's going to be a product of basis in areas. It's going to, you know, work. That's the job of the market, is to get corn from where it is to where it needs to be. And so you're going to see different things happening with freight rates, all that stuff. It's going to be, I don't envy the merchandiser at this point, put it that way, because there's an awful lot of moving parts right now.
Brian, just on the outside macro markets as well, a little bit more, love to just let you expand your thoughts here on everything going with the dollar and some of the other issues we're seeing with currencies worldwide. I know a lot of talk about this, the Fed still kind of keeping their hawkish stance here and raising rates and talking about another rate coming up yet here when we get to, I believe, November. You know, with this dollar and everything else and watching currencies worldwide, I just know that it seems like this is going to be a wet blanket over everything until we get some things under control here with inflation.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's more and more talk about, you know, how we need to see interest rates go to the rate of inflation in order to really curb inflation. So we're not there yet. That would suggest that even if inflation slows down a little bit, we probably still need to see rates get to 6.5 or so. When you think about the currencies, this British pound move that we had coming out of the weekend and CME Group halting trade there, you know, there's a lot of big movements happening in currencies, and that's really important. When you think about the plumbing in the world financial system, you get something to break there in the financial plumbing. And you know, you think back in 08, it was Lehman Brothers. And so I think Credit Suisse is another name that you need to watch right now. Some of the default bond swaps right now are very close to levels that we saw on Lehman Brothers before they went down. So there's things that are happening out there, which you have to understand can impact corn and soybeans. If the funds are long a couple hundred thousand contracts of corn, and all of a sudden something happens in the financial system and they just don't want to be long anymore, that's a lot of contracts they need to sell. And so it may not have anything to do with the balance sheet that knocks this market off these highs. It could be just overall macroeconomic money flow. And so that's, to me, is a reason in and of itself to, at the very least, carry puts under bushels you haven't priced yet and still hope that the bullish fundamentals win out over the long run.
It's definitely about risk management, that is for sure. Any worries about Hurricane Ian impacting the Southeast? I know it's going through some fertilizer production areas for the U.S. Do you think that would have any major impacts for the market here as we move forward, or do you think it might just be short term, depending on, I guess it would depend on what we see for, you know, any destruction in the hurricane's path?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, the damage is possible. You think back to a year ago and the type of damage that was done to export facilities and the amount of time it took to repair those facilities and get us back online. You know, could there be a short-term impact? Absolutely. Could it be a longer-term impact that takes more of a toll on fertilizer production? Yeah, it's possible. It really just depends on how much damage is done. And, you know, and I think the market will be watching the, you know, the landfall maps and trying to figure out where it looks like it's going and what that's going to impact. But it's really hard to tell what the long-term ramifications are until we see what kind of damage is done, if at all.
Well, Brian, we always appreciate your insight and analysis. And I know in volatile markets like this, it comes down to risk management. And you mentioned quite a few things that you guys are recommending. If producers need some more advice and want to talk to you and the team there at agmarket.net individually and talk about their situation, I know you guys have a lot of great resources, a lot of ways to get in touch with you. What's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
844-4-AG-MARKET is our general line. So 844-424-6758. You can reach me directly at 815-665-0463. And check out the website, www.agmarket.net.
Brian, always a pleasure to chat with you, and great stuff as always. Thanks for the time. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thank you, Jesse. Appreciate it.
And again, that is Brian Split of AgMarket.net joining us here today on the show, providing us with market analysis and insight. Always great to catch up with Brian. And again, it just feels like with these markets as a whole, it's going to come down to risk management here moving forward with all this volatility we are seeing with the U.S. dollar and other world currencies and world economies. So much to really take in this market trade. You throw in the harvest pressure as well, as harvest is slowly progressing along. And corn and soybeans, as we talked about a little bit earlier, we are a little bit behind here with the harvest. So definitely a lot of things to watch closely in this market trade moving forward. All right, coming up next, we're going to take a look at some of the other headlines here throughout the world of agriculture as we continue with more market talk. We'll be back on the way right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back into Market Talk. Thanks again for making us part of your day here today. Jesse Allen with you here as, again, big thanks to Brian Split of AgMarket.net for joining us with analysis of the market trade from Tuesday's session. Again, it was a another volatile one in the markets, and with everything going on with the U.S. dollar and just all the recession fears in the market, we're going to continue to see this volatility, it feels like, here as we move forward. So definitely stay tuned with us here on Market Talk. We'll try to bring you the best analysis that we can to try to make sense of everything that is going on in the market trade. Well, as we take a look at what's happening in the world of agriculture, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack announced that the agency is taking steps to fight the high cost of fertilizer for American farmers. USDA is making $500 million in grants available to increase American-made fertilizer production to spur competition and combat those higher prices.
We want it first and foremost to be utilized by independent operations. Those are outside the dominant fertilizer companies, so it creates competition and an opportunity for new players, if you will. We want it obviously to be focused on Made in America. We want to invest in innovation. We want to make sure that whatever is going into the development of this fertilizer is produced sustainably in terms of the production process or the transportation process or the feedstock that is used. And we hope that it's farm focused.
The secretary talks about how the agency is structuring the grant program.
Essentially, we're going to have two grant application processes. The awards under this program can be anywhere from $1 million up to $100 million. They can span projects that will take the next 3 to 5 years. The first application window after it's filed will be a 45-day application window. And that application window will be for applications designed to make the case that they are ready, willing, and able with additional resources to provide assistance and relief to farmers in terms of access to fertilizer in crop year 2023 and crop year 2024.
The second application window will be 90 days and designed for projects that will take longer to complete. He says the funding is available for a wide variety of groups and organizations.
Who can apply? Well, it's pretty broad. For-profit companies can apply. Nonprofits can apply. Tribes and tribal organizations can apply. Producer-owned co-ops can apply. Certified benefit corporations and state and local government and their agencies can also apply. Information about the grants will be on the website at www.grants.gov.
And again, you can get more information online by going to grants.gov. That's grants.gov. Well, World Dairy Expo gets underway this weekend, starting Sunday in Madison, Wisconsin. Katie Schmidt, World Dairy Expo Communications Manager, says the event features a new event schedule for this year.
Yes, we have that new event schedule that we keep talking about at World Dairy Expo. So we are kicking off on Sunday, October 2nd, and ending on Friday, October 7th. So not Saturday this year, but Friday. And of course, that trade show is going to start on Tuesday. The Dairy Cattle Show starts on Monday, and that means youth contests are all day on Sunday.
So what can attendees expect?
Well, the first thing you're going to notice when you arrive at Expo is that we do have those digital admission passes this year. So you can purchase your admission before you arrive on our website, worlddairyexpo.com. Admission is charged Tuesday through Friday this year. So not all 6 days, just those last four when the trade show is open and when educational opportunities are taking place. The second thing, of course, is that schedule change. But the third is that everybody's excited to be back in Expo. There's 650 companies that are exhibiting this year. There are so many cows entered in the Dairy Cattle Show. We are looking at a very, very, very robust Dairy Cattle Show this year.
You can learn more online at worlddairyexpo.com. Well, the Biden administration on Monday announced that two new Department of Agriculture efforts to support fair and competitive meat and poultry markets. The efforts include publishing the proposed inclusive competition and market integrity rules under the Packers and Stockyards Act to protect farmers and ranchers from abuse, and a new $15 million agricultural competition challenge to ramp up collaboration with the state attorneys general on enforcement of competition laws, such as laws against price fixing. The two efforts come from the White House Competition Council, which held a meeting Monday. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says, quote, USDA is focused on building new, fairer, and more resilient markets, protecting producers and reducing food costs, end quote. Now, earlier this year, USDA and the Department of Justice announced their commitment to work closely together to effectively enforce federal competition laws, including by launching the farmerfairness.gov complaint portal for reporting suspected violations of federal competition law. Well, officials from the United States, Mexico, and Canada met last week as part of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreements Environment Committee. The committee was established as part of the USMCA to oversee the environment chapter's implementation and provide a forum to discuss and review chapter implementation. At the meeting, the officials discussed progress and challenges faced in implementing the environmental obligations since the agreement's entry into force in 2020. Now, the committee also discussed follow-up items from the first committee meeting, including the findings of a mapping exercise to identify gaps and opportunities for trilateral collaboration for implementing Chapter 24 commitments, recognizing the need to ensure complementarity and avoid duplication with efforts already underway by the Commission for Environmental Cooperation. In addition, the committee held a public session to share information and hear from stakeholders from Canada, Mexico, and the United States regarding the implementation of Chapter 24. And ending the 14-week stretch of gas prices declining, the national average gas price posted a rise of 3.2 cents from a week ago to $3.67 per gallon. The national average is down 17.5 cents from a month ago, but still 49.3 cents higher than a year ago. Now, the national average diesel price declined 5.1 cents last week and stands at $4.88 a gallon. Refinery snags in some areas of the country contribute to wild fluctuations as areas of the West Coast, Pacific Northwest, Great Lakes, and Plains have seen significant refinery issues, leading to supply challenges. However, the Northeast and Gulf Coast continue to see normal activity at refineries, and prices there have dropped. The disconnect between regions grows larger and will likely remain abnormal for the next few weeks. Gas Buddy's Patrick DeHaan says, quote, "A slew of unexpected refinery disruptions, including fires and routine maintenance, have seemingly all happened in a short span of time," end quote. And that's all the time we have for Market Talk here today. Again, thanks to Brian Split of AgMarket.net and Whitney Munnen of AgriGold for joining us here on the show today. Coming up tomorrow, Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics. Have a fantastic rest of your day. I'm Jesse Allen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least. But there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.